Hey, has lichen sclerosis messed with your relationships? You know, partner, family, friends, even at work? Then you need to join us at the Holistic Healing Summit this May 13th to the 17th, because we're bringing all the experts. We're going to be talking about intimacy, sex, as well as how do you talk to your family, friends, provider, boss? All of those things. And this is a free event, live, virtually, so you can catch it anywhere in the world, May 13th to the 17th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We've got sessions going on all day. Get more information at lssupportnetwork.org/WHS. That's lssupportnetwork.org/WHS.
Hey, welcome. Thank you so much for coming to listen to the Lichen Sclerosis Podcast. My name is Kathy, and this is our journal of learning about and living with lichen sclerosis. Each week, I research an aspect of lichen sclerosis and bring you the information so you don't have to go looking for it. Just like you, I have LS, and I went many, many years before I got diagnosed. And when I went searching for answers, I couldn't find them. So I decided I would bring the answers to you, because I know I couldn't be the only one. So this is the origins of the Lichen Sclerosis Podcast, and this is season 2, and I'm so excited to be back with you. If you're a new listener, thank you for giving me a chance. And if you're an OG, welcome back, Mama. I missed you. So towards the end of last season, I started doing virtual meetups monthly. Actually, right before I left, I was about to do my first one. Well, girl, them things is a hit. And now I do them every other Saturday. We're doing them at 2 to 4 p.m. and from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you want to join the party, come on. That's your invite. Come on. LichenSclerosisPodcast.com/connect. Okay? Head on over there. Put your info in there. And I'll be sending you all the information you need. And I cannot wait to see you. While I'm talking about my ladies, I want to give a birthday shout out to one of my girls, Alana. Happy birthday, sweetie. I see you stepping out the teens into your 20s like you own the damn place. I'm so proud of how far you've come in such a little time. All right. I know you didn't come to hear my beautifulness. You came to get the goods. So let's get into the first episode of season 2. And I'm so excited to bring you an interview with Dr. Jill Kraft. Now, if you're not on Instagram following Dr. Jill, you need to get on there now, okay? She be dropping the goods. She be educating us on LS all the time. I'll have her information in the show notes, so no worries, just go on over there, scroll up on your podcatcher, or you know what? Just go over to the website, lichensclerosispodcast.com/drjill, J-I-L-L, is where the information is going to be for this episode. Dr. Jill is a researcher, and she is a lichen sclerosis specialist. And I say that in air quotes because we know there's no such thing as a specialist for lichen sclerosis. But this is her bread and butter. She treats us all the time. And she works with the Center for Vulvovaginal Disorders. She's legit. Okay? She's legit. And right now, today, February 5th, when this episode is coming out, she is running a research survey on ladies of reproductive age with LS. So what does that mean? That means if you have LS and you are between the ages of 18 and 50, you need to go over to lichensclerosispodcast.com. Did I say cash? lichensclerosispodcast.com/survey. Fill it out, add your voice in there, and get some research for us. Because you know we've been under-researched. Come on now. I'll hold on. You can pause this. Go over lichensclerosispodcast.com/survey. Fill it out and come back. Okay? So, let's get into this episode. We are going to talk about women of reproductive age. And keep listening, because we are going to cover everything you need to know on how to apply your steroid properly. Okay? Because you know if you've been talking to me, I've been telling you about it. But now you're about to hear it from the horse's mouth. So let's get on into this episode. Dr. Jill, thank you so much for being here with us today. I've got so many questions for you, but I'm going to try to keep it strictly to what we're here for today, and that's to talk about your new research study on women of reproductive ages. I think it's super important because I am part of that group, and we get overlooked. So, yay! Finally, some representation.
Yes, I'm so happy to be here and to spread awareness. I see patients in their 20s, 30s, 40s all the time with lichen sclerosis. I see new patients, I diagnose them. I see patients who've received a diagnosis and had no idea what to do with that, and I counsel them. And so I know that lichen sclerosis exists in this age group.
Perfect. Talking about your study, I'm going to have the link in the show notes. So definitely go to lichensclerosispodcast.com/Dr. Jill, and you'll be able to just click on there, fill out the questionnaire if you're between 18 and 50, and get yourself in there, get counted, use your voice. This is your time, Dr. Jill. Why did you feel this is important? What made you start this study?
So historically, when you look at textbooks and the research, lichen sclerosis is typically diagnosed in two different age groups. It's diagnosed in young girls that have not gone through puberty yet, and it's diagnosed in women who have gone through menopause. Mm-hmm. So we call that a bimodal distribution, meaning in the beginning and at the end, and there's nothing in the middle. Mm-hmm. And the issue is that we know that women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, between those two age groups, do have lichen sclerosis. They can be symptomatic with lichen sclerosis, and they often go years without a diagnosis because the idea is that they can't have it, and we know that they do. And so really what this research is looking at is what symptoms do women who are of reproductive age, so of the age where they're able to get pregnant and have babies, but really referring to the 20s, 30s, and 40s before menopause, what symptoms do they have? And what is their experience? And what happens during pregnancy? What happens in the postpartum period? What happens with breastfeeding? Because we really don't have any literature on any of these questions. And this is essential because awareness from healthcare providers is going to come from the textbooks, the literature, the courses that are done on this. And if it's not mentioned anywhere, then it's not going to be covered in the grand rounds presentations, in the journal articles. And so I want to give voice to the women who are of this age group to let them know that you are represented. Let's represent you. And we have reason to believe that women of this age group may have a different presentation than postmenopausal women, meaning they may have different symptoms than women who are after menopause.
Oh, wow.
The idea here is that women who are of reproductive age, the difference between them and the younger girls and the older women who've gone through menopause is estrogen. So women of reproductive age, 20s, 30s, 40s, they have higher estrogen levels. So the main symptom that we see with lichen sclerosis, at least what is documented in the literature, in the textbooks, what we learn about when we're learning about this, is itching. So itching is the main symptom that's going to bring women into the doctor's office.
Right.
Now, what we have noticed clinically when we're seeing patients in the office is that younger women in that age group, the 20s to 40s, do not always have the itching as their main symptom that they come in with. The main symptom that I've seen these women come in with is actually tearing. Mm-hmm. So they'll have tearing with intercourse during sex. And so this is not really reported anywhere. And because the younger women do not have itching, then the doctor's not automatically going to jump to lichen sclerosis, especially if the clinical signs are subtle or if it's early lichen sclerosis. So maybe all the signs are not as obvious as they would be in someone that's postmenopausal. And I think that that's what's contributing to some of the delay in diagnosis that we see in lichen sclerosis. And there's a delay in diagnosis for postmenopausal women too. I don't want to discount that. But actually, one study looked at women who were postmenopausal and asked them when they thought their symptoms started. And almost 40% said that they thought that their symptoms actually started before they went into menopause, but then they just didn't develop the itching until their estrogen levels went down after menopause. So looking back on it, maybe we can prevent some of the scarring that occurs with lichen sclerosis if we can just catch this earlier, before people get really symptomatic and before things start disappearing, if you will, and before the clitoris gets covered or before they have scarring that makes intercourse more uncomfortable.
I completely agree. I hear that a lot. My main audience is these younger women between anywhere from 18 up to in their 50s. A lot of them reach out to me on a daily basis. And that is one of the biggest, the most common symptoms that I've heard is the tearing during sex. And then when they go in, some of them are told, oh, you're too young to have lichen sclerosis, or they're told something crazy like, oh, you need to have sex with men with smaller penises. The penises you're having are too big. It's like ridiculous. And it causes trauma for us, because when we do go to the doctor and we're in our 20s and our 30s and we're continuously going back because we're being told all these other things and we're not being listened to and believed and diagnosed properly, after a certain time, you're like, screw it, I'm just not going to go back and I'm not going to keep wasting my money, my time, and constantly feeling like, okay, it's me, you know, and then you start internalizing it. And then by the time it gets really bad, you get a new symptom, or you're now fused over and you're freaking out thinking, okay, I have cancer, or God forbid, some women do go decades and end up with vulvar cancer. It's too late.
You know? Yes, and all of this is completely preventable.
Yes.
And that's the biggest thing. So what, and I hear this experience over and over and over in the patients that I see, and women are so relieved for me even to say, oh yes, this is what I do every day. I've already seen two women just like you. And they're like, oh my gosh, I'm at the right place. Like, yes, finally, because they've been dismissed over and over and over.
Now, let me ask you, how does the steroid help with the tearing during sex?
This is such a great question. So So most women think that lichen sclerosis is a problem with the tissue being too thin.
Right.
And even our, the scientists who initially discovered lichen sclerosis and described it, they initially described it as a thinning condition, which is false. And so we now know that actually what's happening is the skin is too thick. So when we see tears, it's not like tissue paper tearing. It's not a thin paper tear. Instead, it's like a thick sidewalk of concrete cracking. Mm. The tears occur because there's no give to the tissue. The tissue cannot expand. It's not elastic. It can't stretch like normal tissue would. And when it can't stretch, it tears. The idea here is that by decreasing the inflammation in the tissue, that tissue is able to function in the way that it's meant to. And so by treating the inflammation, it makes more normal collagen in that tissue. And so that tissue is able to be as elastic as it should be. It's able to kind of stretch in normal ways that it should. And so by treating that area and decreasing inflammation with topical steroids, you're basically going to heal fissure and you're going to prevent fissures from occurring in the future. And, you know, just knowing that it's a myth that the tissue is too thin, because that feeds into, oh, well, steroids thin the tissue and I'm tearing because the tissue is too thin, when in actuality, the tissue is too thick and the steroids are decreasing inflammation and they don't have the same effects that they would in normal skin. So it's actually what you want to do, not what you don't want to do.
Right. That makes more sense. So how long do you normally say, okay, listen, you can start looking for reduction in symptoms within this amount of time?
So that is going to be variable. It depends on your starting point, but it can take up to 3 months.
Okay.
And so it's going to be different depending on your starting point. And then the other part of this is sometimes we can get someone in remission and they, you know, they still have tearing just because of the changes that have occurred. And so sometimes we do have to do a minor procedure where we basically remove a thin layer of where the tear is down at the vaginal opening on the bottom, and it allows that area to heal in a more open way. Because what can happen is the skin can fuse together. And when there's fusion of the skin, you can treat that lichen sclerosis skin and it won't be as thick, but it's still stuck.
Got it.
Right. And
so just so I can clarify, they're tearing. They're not really, their normal skin is not tearing. What's tearing is that fused skin. And because they're having sex and that fused skin is fused and you're pushing and putting pressure on that skin, it's now tearing. And then eventually it'll fuse again and you'll continue to run that process. So what you're saying is there's a surgery that will properly separate it, and then you heal that properly, and then you don't have that problem no more. Am I understanding that correctly?
You have that 100% correct. All right. And we actually utilize the steroid after the surgery to keep that area open. Mm-hmm. And as you may know, steroids delay healing. Right? They make it longer for skin to heal, but that's actually a good thing because you want it to heal open and not attach right back together like it wants to do.
Now, what about the clitoral hood?
So that is a perfect segue into the clitoral hood. So what can happen with the clitoral hood? If you think about the clitoral hood as a hoodie, right? Mm-hmm. And your clitoris is the head. So the clitoral hood is like the hoodie over your head. What can happen is if you pull the drawstrings and that hoodie comes together, it can stick. Okay. Mm-hmm. In addition, the clitoral hood can stick to the clitoris. So it can stick to your head, if you will. And so we see stickiness to the clitoris itself, as well as stickiness of the skin of the hood of the clitoris called the clitoral prepuce. That's the technical name for it. So we can also do a very minor procedure where we basically restore the anatomy that you had before by basically releasing that fusion or that fused tissue. It's almost like unzipping a zipper, if you will. And then making sure that that clitoral hood is able to glide over the clitoris instead of being stuck to the clitoris. The other thing that can occur that some people may not know about is that we have dead skin cells on our body all the time. Our skin is constantly shedding and renewing, and the genital area is no different than that. So what can happen is those dead skin cells can kind of ball up into a hard ball, like a grain of sand, and it can get trapped under that fused area where the clitoris is. And when that happens, it's almost like having a grain of sand in your eye, because the clitoris is very sensitive, as we know. And so if you have those little grains of sand, we call those keratin pearls, which is, sounds like a nice name, but it's they're actually very uncomfortable. So you can have these little grains of sand called keratin pearls trapped underneath, and it can cause quite a bit of clitoral sensitivity as well as clitoral pain. And they're actually easily taken care of. Sometimes in the office, if the clitoris is not completely covered over, I can put a really strong numbing cream on that area, and I can unstick the clitoral hood from the clitoris, and I can remove those little grains of sand called keratin pearls. And then the pain goes away, and women are so, so happy.
So definitely do not try that at home. No. Don't go buy no lidocaine and be having there with your mirror opening your legs, because I'm guarantee you a numbing cream is a lot stronger than yours.
My numbing cream is much stronger than anything you could possibly get. And I actually did have, I had a woman who messaged me on Instagram asking me if she could do it herself. I advised her that that is not a good idea. This area is very, very, very sensitive. But I can tell you, if you want to make a best friend, if you release their clitoris and take away those little keratin pearls, you have made a best friend.
Absolutely. So for ladies who cannot come to DC to see you, what is the name of this procedure, this to open up either the vaginal opening or the clitoral hood? Do they have certain names that they can go and talk to their doctors about it?
Yeah, so generally this is called a dorsal slit procedure.
Is that and for both or for the vagina?
For the unzippering of the clitoral hood, that's called a dorsal slit procedure. In general, when we're talking about unsticking things, we call it a lysis of adhesions. Okay. So adhesions means basically scar tissue where things are stuck together that shouldn't be. And lysis means that you're separating them. So lysis of adhesions is what we generally do. And that's what I can do in the office with really strong numbing cream. A true dorsal slit procedure where you're actually unzippering that area, that usually requires a bit of anesthesia more than the local cream that I'm able to put on. And so it's a same day procedure. It's really quick, and recovery time is a little longer just because of the clobetasol, the steroid that you're placing. And we want that to be longer because we don't want it to immediately fuse after. But I would say women are feeling pretty good in 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
Or maybe even sooner. I've had women who have responded really well and have gotten better even sooner.
Awesome. There are a lot of doctors out there who aren't current on the research, who are giving out bad information. And I think a lot of it has to do with they don't see it often. So they're going off of the old research and they're saying, like I was told, use it as needed. Don't use the steroid too much because it's going to thin your skin. Or you want to just use it for 3 weeks and don't keep using it. It's too much. That's old research. That's been proven wrong. We've got new research. We've got new guidelines. So from a medical professional who treats this all the time, who researches it, give it to us straight. How should we put it on? When should we put it on? And what should we be doing when we put it on?
So the answer is that the schedule of how you're going to be applying or how frequently you're going to be applying the medication really depends upon the symptoms that you're having, as well as the exam, especially the exam. The goal here is to get in remission. Remission mm-hmm. is when the skin no longer appears thickened. So the texture that we were talking about before has resolved. Now, let's go back one step so I can make this a little more accessible.
Okay.
So the idea of how this happens, the inflammation in that bottom layer causes symptoms. So the idea with topical steroids is that steroids decrease inflammation. That's how they work. They decrease inflammation. And so when they're applied to the skin, first of all, they need to get all the way down to that area right above the basement membrane. They need to absorb through all the skin layers to get to where that inflammation is located. Now, that skin is thick, so it's hard for the steroid to get all the way down there unless you're applying it in the right way. And I'm going to let you in on how to do that.
Yes,
so the
please.
First step is you need to soak prior to application. What does soaking do? When you're in a bath, what happens to your fingers and your toes? They get wrinkly, right? Mm-hmm. So it softens the skin. And so by soaking for about 15 to 20 minutes, it softens the thickened skin of lichen sclerosis. And then you want to pat that area dry, and then you want to apply the topical steroid at that point, because then it will go down to that level where the inflammation is and it will work better. In general, we recommend using a corticosteroid ointment instead of a cream. What's the difference? An ointment is thicker, okay? Mm-hmm. And it penetrates down to that layer better. It also has a bit of a higher potency, and there's a lot of inflammation. As you can imagine, you would need a lot of inflammation to cause the skin changes that lichen sclerosis causes. It's an incredible mm-hmm. amount of inflammation. And so you really need what we call a big gun steroid. And that's technically what we call it, is an ultra potent steroid, ultra potent. And examples of that, the example that we know most commonly is clobetasol. Mm-hmm. And so I generally use clobetasol ointment instead of cream. The other reason that I use ointment instead of cream is because creams tend to have alcohol in their bases. And so when you apply that to areas that may have fissures or those small cuts, it's going to burn.
Yep.
And so then women will report, oh, well, I tried it, but it burned. And, mm-hmm. and I think I'm having a reaction. And then they'll say, okay, the cream doesn't work for me, or
right.
the clobetasol doesn't work for me. But they've never tried the ointment, which is actually a lot more soothing and brings moisture into the skin, like a Vaseline or an Aquaphor would, you know, in the same idea. And so as far as the base goes, and so I've had women that I've seen in the office that say clobetasol does not work for me. And then I ask them, well, tell me exactly what you were using. And they say, oh, well, I was using a cream and it burned and it didn't work. And then we talk about how to apply. And guess what? I see them back in 2 to 3 months and they're better. So it's really about how you apply as well. Oh, and the other important thing is when you apply the ointment, you need to rub it in. You need to rub it in. If it's just a layer on the top of the skin, even if the skin is softened by soaking, it's not going to penetrate all the way down to that bottom layer. So in general, I have women rub in for a minute and a half mm-hmm. or even 2 minutes, which seems crazy long. And sometimes I'll tell them when they first come to me, and if the lichen sclerosis is pretty severe, I'll have them actually set a timer on their phone to know how long that is.
Now, let me ask you this before I go on. You say soak and you know, in the bath or sitz bath or something like that. Does showering count? And I may be doing it wrong, but I apply after a hot shower, 15, 20 minute shower. And then I apply. I'm not a bath person. Honestly, I don't have the 15, 20 minutes to sit and, you know, soak my vulva. So that's what I do. Am I doing it wrong?
So the answer is that it depends how clinically severe the lichen sclerosis is. And it also depends on logistics, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a woman, I'm a mom, I totally get it. If you ask someone who's a real purist, they're going to say, yes, you absolutely need to soak before every application. But I can tell you, as a woman and as a mom, I'd rather you do it and do it in the right way that works for you rather than not do it at all, right, and not be treated. And so the gold standard would be to soak for 15 to 20 minutes in water, in warm water, with nothing else in the water. You don't need to add anything else to the water. Okay. Sure. Now the next best thing to do would be to do a warmer hot shower and then pat dry and apply it right away afterwards.
That's what I do.
And then I have women who, you know, they're traveling, they're, you know, all kinds of circumstances. And I sometimes say, well, one thing you can do is take a warm washcloth, okay, hold it to that area for, you know, 10, 15 minutes or so until it kind of cools a little bit, and then pat dry and then apply. So I think that there's different ways that we can do it. And it also depends on how thickened the skin is. If the skin is very thickened, then I would definitely recommend the soaking at first. But as the medication is working over time and the skin becomes more healthy and the skin becomes less sclerotic, is what we call it in medical terms, or less thickened, mm-hmm, then, you know, you can probably get away with some of these other logistics things. And that's not the purest standpoint, right, on it, but that's the logical woman, mom, busy person who has, you know, yeah, responsibilities.
Absolutely.
That's the answer.
I tell ladies, do what works for you. That's not going to become a hassle. Make it part of your routine. What works for you in your routine? Because if you make it a hassle, if you make it a chore, you're eventually going to stop doing it, because you're going to be like, this is too much. I can't keep doing this every day. But if you make it a part of your routine and it just becomes second nature, then you're going to keep doing it. It's going to be like brushing your teeth or taking a shower. It's just going to be another thing. So yeah, just like you said, I have a whole routine on my days. I pull out my tube. I put it there next to my deodorant. I know when I get out the shower, I put my deodorant on and then I get to rubbing. So yeah, I hear you.
And the other important thing is the amount that you're using. So yes, it's really only a pea-sized amount. It's a very small amount. And that's really all you need, as long as you're applying it in the correct way. And so I had one patient, she was an older lady, so sweet. And she told me, you know, I'm trying to get this under control. She was doing quite well, actually. But she said, I apply the clobetasol and I soak and I pat dry and I rub it in, and I'm rubbing it in for, you know, 90 seconds, just like you told me. And then I take another layer and I slab another layer on top. Oh, no. And I said, well, I was like, that other layer that you're slabbing on top really isn't doing anything. You're just wasting the medication. You really don't
make
it
turn raw. I mean, because if you use too much, you end up really red. We had a member who was doing a dime size twice a day for 3 months. And she reported she was really red and inflamed. And I told her, I said, sweetie, I think you're using too much. You know, you need to cut it back. Cut it back to either, you know, once a day and taper down.
Exactly.
And now she's doing amazing. She's doing amazing.
And a couple thoughts on this. Sometimes when we see that, you know, because it is a steroid that's decreasing inflammation, it can slightly increase risk of developing yeast on the skin of that area. And it's not like a typical yeast infection that you would think of, with the white clumpy discharge and the itching that you would think of there. It's more of like a baby diaper rash kind of yeast. And so sometimes we will see that, especially when people are applying too much. So you don't want to be an overachiever here.
Right.
More is not better. It's more important to do it in the exact correct way rather than, you know, slathering this all over the place, right, and, you know, thinking that you're thinking that more is better, when actually it's about technique.
I heard on another podcast, Dr. Gail Fisher was on, and she said, she had a saying and it hit home. If it's white, you're not using enough. If it's red, you're using too much. So you want it right in the middle there, where it's nice and pink. and listen to your body. So tell us, because I know every doctor's guidance is different and it should go along with your symptoms and where you are. But what are the general guidance as far as application schedule?
Yes. So basically with the ointment, because it is more potent, you really do not want to be placing it more than once a day. Mm-hmm. We will sometimes see women who come to us who were prescribed cream and we're told to do it twice a day. But remember, cream is not as potent.
Right.
I don't prefer the cream for the reasons we talked about. When we're talking about ointment, if you're applying it twice a day, that's too much in my opinion. So once a day is the max. And then our goal is to get you down to a maintenance regimen. And in general, the maintenance regimen is twice a week.
Okay.
And this is divided by about 3 days. So we're talking about Monday, Thursday, okay, or Sunday, Wednesday. Those are the most popular times that I've heard.
Monday, Thursday.
And that's what I tell my patients. It makes sense because then you're avoiding Friday night and Saturday night, right?
Yeah.
Because it has to be something that works in your life. And so the goal is to get you down to maintenance regimen, which is twice a week. And that is continued for life, forever. Now, the guidelines differ on that recommendation. I want to be clear. Some of the guidelines say that you can, as symptoms improve and as clinical picture improves, that you can stop the topical steroid. I disagree with that. The reason that I disagree with that is because there have been some studies, and especially one study that was done about 5 years ago. It was done by Lee. And basically, the research team looked at women who were being optimally treated. So they were on maintenance schedules where they were getting consistent follow-up. They were applying the topical steroid clobetasol ointment twice a week, as well as they actually were applying other different types of high potency steroids too. So it wasn't just clobetasol. But they were treating with that regimen and they were being consistent. And then they compared this with women who were suboptimally treated or not compliant with their topical steroid. And when they followed these women out, they found that about 4 to 5% of the women who were suboptimally treated or not compliant developed vulvar cancer, whereas the women that were optimally treated, getting regular yearly follow-up, none of those women developed vulvar cancer. And that was enough to convince me, along with reviewing all of the other studies on this and knowing the full breadth of research on this, that I don't think that you should stop. I think that you should continue. And if you're applying it in the right way, and you're just doing a pea-sized amount, and you're just doing twice a week, the risks are really, really limited. And the benefits are really great because you're helping to prevent further fusion, right? You're preventing symptoms from recurring, and you're also preventing progression to pre-cancer and to cancer.
Yeah. I hear that a lot. And like I said, most of my audience is within that 18 to 50-year-old range. And I'm a big proponent for steroids. I say, listen, you treat the way that you feel comfortable, but this is what the science says, and this is what I follow, and I'm going to give you what the science says. And I can tell you, I was not treating optimally, properly, even though I knew about this months ago. I'm really bad with taking my medicine and doing my medicine schedules the way it's supposed to. But I started doing it properly 10 weeks ago. And I can tell you, I have not had any symptoms. I did have where my first month where I was doing every day, about the start of the fourth week, I started feeling the burning and irritation. I took it as my body saying, okay, listen, we're good. You can taper down. I did that and I've been golden. So it works if you do it properly. And I'm telling you, this is not just me. I've listened to a lot of other women. I give them the proper schedule, how to apply it properly, when to apply it. And they always come back. I'm doing amazing.
Yes. And my recommendations between the daily and the two times a week, that's what varies, right? Mm-hmm. So that depends on me evaluating you as a patient in the office. That depends on the symptoms that you're having. And it really depends on the clinical picture. So I see so much of this. This is really one of the main things that I do. And so I can look during an exam and determine which dosing schedule between those two, where you should be, for how long, when you should go down to the next stage.
Do you do the three stages? Because what I was told, or what my research is found, is you start off daily for a month, then you drop down to every other day for a month, and then you go to twice a week for the rest of your life until you got a major flare, and then you start over if necessary.
So that's general, but there's an art to medicine. There's an art to this. So sometimes I will have a patient start it every other day, right?
Okay. Right.
Sometimes I will have a patient do daily for 6 weeks instead of 4 weeks or longer. And so that all really depends on your clinical exam and the appearance of the changes and how thick the skin is, where the skin thickness is. And the other thing that I do is not all areas of the vulva and around the anus are going to need the same. And so I have a picture of a magnified vulva. It's like a huge vulvar picture. And I actually color code it with different highlighters to show where I want you to put the medication, how long to rub it in different areas, and so forth. Eventually, we do get down to a uniform, okay, you rub it in for 90 seconds twice a week, and I get as they get better, all the areas will get better, and they'll be on a easy-to-follow maintenance regimen. But at first, when I first see somebody, there's variation in my recommendations. And that's not something that can be replicated in like a recipe, right? That has to really depend on the clinical picture, on your symptoms, on your exam, to really determine what needs to be done.
That's amazing. That is the first time I've ever heard that. I've always heard apply it every other day or whatever their maintenance schedule is. And I've never heard apply it here on this schedule and this part on this schedule because they're two different levels of disease going on here.
But it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's an individual. You're going to have areas that are going to be worse than others. And, you know, eventually I'll get you, you know, within a few months, I'll get you to a place where you're on smooth sailing, you're maintenance, right, and you're just applying a pea-sized amount twice a week, and every area, no area is worse than any other area because you're in remission. But in order to get you there, sometimes you need more guidance.
Right. And that's why you want to see someone who is specialized in LS, who knows what they're talking about, because you're going to get this quality care that we don't normally get. Now, while you're talking about the different areas, is there any area that's off limits to where we apply our clobetasol? And the reason I ask is because a lot of women do ask, you know, should I put it on my anus? Is it just for the vulva? Should I put it where the hair is on my labia majora? And then other women say, well, I only have symptoms on my mons pubis. Should I put it on my labia minora?
So that becomes a little bit more nuanced because it depends, again, on the clinical picture. Mm-hmm. So the idea here, and this speaks to the idea or what people have heard about steroids thinning the skin, mm-hmm, and how you can't use them for a long time because the skin will become thin.
Right.
Well, let's go back to the cause again, that level of inflammation. So that level of inflammation is something that the body is producing, and it keeps producing and keeps producing, right? There can be variations if someone's untreated. There can be variations during your lifespan in how the body's responding and how much inflammation that you're producing. And that explains why there can be flares. And then there can be times when you're really not that symptomatic at all during the course of your lifetime if you're not being treated. But the idea here is that inflammation is present because of the way that the condition works. And so that skin is not normal skin. That skin is not like if you put steroid cream on your arm that has no lesion on it, it has no problem with it. If you put steroid right. on your arm, it would thin the skin of your arm because that arm doesn't have inflammation within the skin. Mm-hmm. However, this area, you can't treat it like normal skin because it's not. And even when you're in remission, you still have the inflammation generators working. And so the idea here is you're applying clobetasol to suppress, right? The right. inflammation. And so that skin, we believe, does not respond like normal skin. So we can't treat it as such. And that's why we don't see the skin thinning, the signs that we commonly associate it with long-term steroid use on lichen sclerosus skin of that area. And we actually have a publication that's going to come out hopefully in the spring that goes through all of the science of that, about what we know and this idea that lichen sclerosus skin doesn't respond the same way. So we can't put limitations on lichen sclerosus skin that we would put on normal skin that was getting steroids.
I'm so glad you said that because I say that all the time. I'm like, I don't know the science about it, but I know my research is saying that, you know, the vulvar skin reacts differently to the steroids. So you can't go off of if you put steroid on your leg, like, so, you know, one lady was putting it on her thigh, like going all the way to her thigh. And I'm like, don't do that. Your vulvar skin is different than your thigh skin. And yeah, you're going to have some reaction on your thigh skin. Just put it on the vulvar skin and around your anus. I know there's so much more we can go into because we didn't even touch on pregnancy and all these other things that I definitely wanted to touch on. But this has been amazing. Thank you so much for giving me your time today. I know you're busy seeing us. If there's anyone in the area who wants to come and see you, they want to come to the Centers for Vulval and Vaginal Disorders, how can they get to you?
Yes. So there is a section on the website where you can send an inquiry. So it basically is just an email to our staff, and then they will respond to you and give you a call and set up a time and go through all the logistics to see if this would be the right next step for you. In addition, you can call the office number, which is listed on the website, and that's www.cvvd.org. And then usually you'll leave a message, and then one of our office staff will get back to you and then go through all the logistics and answer any questions that you have. And that's the best way to learn more and to schedule an appointment if you're interested. In addition, I can be reached at Instagram at JillCraftMD. I do respond to all direct messages, but I cannot give individualized medical advice. So if you do share your story with me, thank you. But unfortunately, I can't give you medical advice based on that. And so sometimes I use that as inspiration for posts, or I'll say, oh, I'll address that in a post. So feel free to reach out to me. I do respond to everybody that I'm able to, which is a big job because I do see patients full time. I'm a mom of three. Yes. But I do think that, you know, when women do reach out to me, I recognize the fact that that took a lot of courage. And I do acknowledge women who reach out to me. So I do see you and I respond to you, but unfortunately, no medical advice on social media. I encourage you to become a patient of mine so I can devote all my time and energy to making you better.
Absolutely. So if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, definitely go to www.cvvd.org and fill out the form and try to get in there with Dr. Jill. And the CVVD is now on Instagram as well. They started February 1st, and that you can find them at the.cvvd. And all of this information will be in the show notes at the website at lichensclerosispodcast.com/Dr. Jill, DRJILL. And thank you so much for just being here. Hopefully we will be able to do this again sometime because I have so many more questions, and I'm sure my listener does too.
I look forward to it. Thank you for having me.
Was that not an amazing conversation or what? Because I know I had goosebumps listening to some of her information. It was like, what? Okay. I need a doctor like her for real, for real. So if you don't have an amazing doctor like Dr. Jill, let's review what you need to know. First off, women of reproductive age seems to be, and the research will definitively show, that their main symptom is tearing during sex. And what causes the tearing? This was like, mind blown. It's the scarring or the fusing that happens at the bottom of the vagina, of the vaginal opening, the vestibule. When you're having sex, that part gets pressed on, pushed on, all kinds of friction be happening over there, and it gets torn. And if you're not using your steroid properly, it's going to continue to fuse and tear. Wow. But there's hope. There's hope. If you use your steroid correctly, you can minimize the fusing. And then if it's really bad, if there's a lot of scarring, there is a surgery that can open you back up so that you don't have that issue no more. Yay! Okay. So how do we use our steroid correctly? Again, if you don't have an amazing doctor like Dr. Jill, I really, really do hope you do, or at least that you can try to find one. But if you don't, general practice, and this is what I did, start your steroid at every day for a month, drop down to every other day for a month, and then go into maintenance mode of twice a week forever, or until you get a flare and then, you know, jump back up. So how do we apply it? Soak your vulva for 15 to 20 minutes, or if you're a busy mom like I am, after a hot shower, or if you're traveling and don't have facilities to take a shower, you take a hot or warm washcloth. I don't want you to burn yourself. A warm washcloth, place it over the vulva for 10, 15 minutes. The thing is, you want a moist vulva. You want it to be ready to soak up that ointment. And yes, we are using ointment, steroid ointment, not cream. And we are applying it on our vulva or in our anus, if that's where you have symptoms, and rubbing it in for 60 to 90 seconds. Okay? Then you're golden. That's it. Move about your day. And remember, if you are red, you need to step down because you're probably irritating yourself. If you're white, that means that you are not using enough and you need to step up. So this was episode one. I really hope you enjoyed. I hope you got so much out of it because, girlfriend, I got so much stuff for you. Okay, I haven't just been sitting back on my laurels, gone on vacation, drinking for the last 2 months. I've been working and working hard. So make sure you signed up, lichensclerosispodcast.com/connect. Our next meetup is Saturday, tomorrow, after this episode comes out. So you better get on it. Get over there, sign up. I want to see you either at 2 to 4 or 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I better see you. I want to talk to you. I want to hear your story. And go to lichensclerosispodcast.com/survey. Fill it out. If you're between 18 and 50, make your voice heard. I hope you have an amazing week. And I will talk to you next time. Bye.